Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
It's always been there, and it's always been something that we've been able to talk about, and it's always been something that, you know, we can criticize after, or we can talk about after and be like, oh, that didn't go as well as planned, or oh, let's talk about this. Like, what does this really mean to us? And what does this, you know, mean about our relationship? And I feel like it's always been about that. And I feel like it's always been about, you know, how close we are and how, you know, that art really brings that out. And if we didn't have that in our life, I don't think we would be as close as we are now. And that matters a lot to me.
Courtney Kessel is a mother, artist, academic, and arts administrator living and working in Athens, Ohio. She lectures and exhibits her work internationally. Through sculpture, photography, performance, video, and sound, her work strives to make visible the quiet, understated, and often unseen love and labor of motherhood. She holds an MFA in sculpture and expanded practices and a certificate in women's and gender studies from Ohio University. Courtney is the gallery director for the Ohio University Art Galleries and teaches in the School of Art and Design at Ohio University, Athens, Ohio. Courtney, it is such a treat to talk about your work and life today. I'm so happy to welcome you to the Artist Mother Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Oh my gosh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Okay, so give us some context. Tell us a little bit about who you are and just some high points along your journey so far as an artist, maybe starting back with something in your younger years or childhood that got you interested in art.
Well, I guess some of the younger influences would probably just be growing up in a house. We lived, the first years of my life were in Taiwan, so there were a lot of artworks from overseas and places my parents had traveled to. Our house was always kind of a salon style gallery. I mean, it still is. They've retired and since moved from that house. But so I think having that kind of like sculpture and woodblock, I mean, I will inherit this woodblock that is actually the wood itself, not the print. And it's probably like, I'm going to say 6 foot by 6 foot squared. And it's just, you know, and these are, so the influence I think is definitely from that, as well as both parents never pursued anything in art, but were infinitely creative people. Mm. So I think that and having the support of them, growing up and choosing a career in art, was a big thing. I have, you know, my undergrad is also in sculpture from Tyler School of Art, and it was a highly conceptual program. So I had the concepts and the whys under my belt, but the sort of methods and making wasn't as strong back then. It was sort of a early 90s, kind of, they just didn't have a lot of, we had demo days, so we didn't focus a lot on, making and materials. Per se, it was more about why you're using the materials you're using, that kind of thing.
That's interesting. I feel like it's usually the other way around.
Yeah, and I feel like it was a sign of the times that, yeah, you know, it was a very much a time for conceptual art and performance. I mean, I studied with Coco Fusco, which was revolutionary for me. Transformative, I guess, would be the better word.
Yeah.
Doing my first performance piece as a human marionette puppet in Exit Art, New York, when I was a junior undergrad. I was a senior. And then, you know, human marionette puppet, this was supposed to be for a final, you know, like a 20-minute final. And so I had the idea and happened to be in the right place at the right time, and was invited to that. So I guess much of my, you know, the making as a sculptor, object making wasn't you know, the emphasis wasn't on objects from the very early time period, and performance felt even more so. You know, it was fairly still, you know, it has its own category now, but always kind of fell under the umbrella of sculpture. And it felt even further removed from the objecthood of sculpture and also kind of commerce. So a lot of the work had always been, I'm not going to sell out. I'm not going to sell my work in a gallery. I'm not making objects to sell. I'm making experiences or something like that. And, you know, I think about that, like, well, I sure would like a paycheck,
right?
You know, selling, you know, having a collection somewhere, you know? So then I was out of undergrad for about 10 years before I decided to pursue my master's. I left Brooklyn, New York, 6 months pregnant, and moved to Kentucky. And that's where Chloe was born. And, my husband at the time, my first husband, her dad was biological dad, was, getting his undergrad degree. And I said, okay, well, as soon as you're done, I'm going to then pursue my master's degree. And that all sort of happened at the same time that we decided to get divorced.
Oh my gosh.
I got accepted to two schools, but chose Ohio University. And in that distance, And in that 10 years, I mean, I'd lived in a lot of different places, like sailboat in Miami and on a goat farm in Vermont. And, you know, I moved around, lived my life, but I was still making art, and I would sort of apply to things. And if I got in, then I made it. And if I didn't get in, I wouldn't make it. And so I felt like pursuing a master's degree, I was interested in, having that critical dialogue again with my artwork, as well as developing a studio practice, not having that sort of disjuncted, disjointed kind of making. And it was in grad school that, I had one professor who I had a teaching seminar with. I don't know if I should name drop, but, he happened to be teaching this. Yeah. So I didn't have a studio class with him my whole grad school career. And I asked him for a studio visit, and he came in and he was like, this is crap. I don't want to talk about that. Why aren't you making work about who you are? And you're 10 years older than most of your peers, your mother, you know, that kind of thing. And I was like, a light bulb went off, and I'm like, okay. Like, you know, and so I went straight to the library and started researching.
I was afraid he was going to say something else. I was afraid you were going to say that he knew you were a mom or something and was going to dismiss you or...
Right.
That's great.
It is great. And it is rare. I mean, because also a lot of my other, you know, artist mothers from all over the world, that is one of their biggest complaints. They were never supported in that aspect. Not saying that I think I was supported. I mean, in education, I was supported. It's the art world that doesn't necessarily support motherhood as a subject matter.
Right.
What they know or don't know about a woman's, you know, ovaries and, you know, birthing, you know, won't hurt. But yeah, it's the subject matter that is not the most fond. So anyways, and so I started researching it and thinking about my experience as a mother and how that could manifest into my artwork. And it's my time in grad school that, I developed that body of work, that started the whole ball rolling.
How old was your daughter when you were in grad school?
Well, she was 4 whenever I started and turned 5 in that fall, that October. So,
You went to a full term 40 hour a week traditional grad program. So
Yeah.
Like how did, like just logistically, how did that work? Did you have her in daycare or something?
Yeah.
That you you took out loans to pay for daycare on top of school?
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, it was a full tuition waiver, but you still had a small stipend at the beginning, which grew in the third year. But, you know, you still had to take out loans for rent and groceries and childcare. And, you know, being a single mom, you know, that was all on me to kind of make happen. And you know, and I thought I would homeschool back then, until I was single and going to grad school. I was like, I can't homeschool.
Yeah.
And so, I took her to preschool and she had half a day there and then half a day daycare. And then it just started the whole public school system. And hopefully, you know, I didn't ruin her in any capacity.
Yeah.
And she got enough education outside of that, like through, you know, everybody being around, being her whole childhood. Yeah. So I don't know how, I feel like I'm rambling.
No. I just find it fascinating, you know, kind of just that you still went for it and, you know, you weren't, I know so many people who would say, well, I can't go to grad school anymore because, you know, I don't have a spouse supporting me or I don't have, or I have a kid or, you know, like, it's just, yeah. It's hard. I mean, I went to a low res program cause I was like, well, we obviously can't do any other form of grad school for me cause our life is already too far along, you know? And I mean, and even that was challenging, but I also sometimes wonder, like, maybe we should have just, I don't know, made a big move so I could have gone to a more traditional program or, you know, like you can't look back and have regrets, obviously, but I just wanted to very intentionally point out that was a big deal, you know, because now it's like you look back and you're like, oh, yeah, I have an MFA from Ohio State. And like, no, you were a single mom who went through a program, you know, and you were 10 years older than your peers and you had a kid and, you know, like how I just think, yeah, I feel like that needs to be stated. So thank you.
Oh, well, thanks. And, you know, I have to say that I had help in the sense of having, oh my gosh, do we have poor connection?
No. Can you hear me?
Okay, great. I had, you know, the grad students, my friends, my peers, they all became a greater community of, family that, you know, they enjoyed having Chloe around and, you know, to this day, it's some of the people, you know, became like aunts and uncles to her and we still visit them and they've still visit us and that kind of thing. So,
that's great. Okay. So talk to me about your actual work. Like, what does your work look like? What does it consist of? And yeah, like in case somebody listening has never seen your work before.
Okay. The most, you know, the current work, has been in the current meaning, I guess the past, 10 years and more recently 5 years, the work, I used to call it a non-hierarchical triad of, the maternal feminism and language, but, I've since gone more towards a hierarchical triad of the maternal being the highest point. And so there's a lot of the work that I'm doing now is largely revolving around the concept of the things in your life as being kind of portraiture for your positionality as a mother. So these things that wouldn't necessarily be in your home if you didn't have a child. And those things are very specific things. They're not things, if you don't have a kid, they're not laying around your house necessarily.
Right.
Unless you have like a younger sibling or something like that. And so I started, you know, The first sculpture / performance that started was Imbalance With, which is a 16-foot seesaw. And, you know, I bring a bunch of household objects into the gallery, you know, ranging from dried beans and carrots and, you know, to bicycle, roller skates and dirty laundry, as well as my daughter. And, they all end up on her side of the seesaw, and I try to create a balance with me on the other end. And so those objects, they really felt like, you know, while they're common objects, we can all identify with those things. They were sort of a portrait or still of our lives together at that time. And so since performing that, for the first time, I felt that it was really successful, and I questioned how to reperform it. How do you reperform? How can you ever do the same thing again? You know, especially in grad school when you're in it, you know, you're constantly turning over new ideas and new ideas for the next critique, next, you know.
Did that one start in grad school?
It did. Yeah. That was my third year. I had invited a small audience into this critique space or sort of mini gallery in our studios. And the group was a range of peers, mentors, you know, professors who I was studying with, as well as community people that I had become friends with. And, you know, when I started, I mean, the funny story about that piece, you know, we had sort of practiced it, getting the stuff on the seesaw. They're all bungee corded down and not super secure, but, they're on there. And, but I didn't know how it was going to end. Mm-hmm. And, it was an interesting because performance is a weird thing. You know, you kind of have to perform it to learn it and understand it more. And I guess it's like, if you were to hang a painting in a gallery, you get responses from people, viewers seeing, I mean, it's similar in that vein, but you don't know certain things with performance entirely. It does inform the work. So not knowing how it's going to end.
I heard you in an interview talk about how you were like, I don't really know if I know when this is going to be over. I guess it's over when my daughter wants to get down. But she was like, I just kind of want to hang out. So you were like, okay, like we're going to keep going.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
I love that.
And you know, while that's somewhat collaborative, I did just do an interview, with Jenny Klein and we covered a lot of territory in that too, which is super fun. And we're talking different questions as well, but, it involves her as sort of a collaborator. I mean, it gives her this agency in the whole thing.
Right.
But it also gives her a lot of power. And I think that kind of, you know, bringing her into my practice in that degree, it's like, it was during grad school that I realized, you know, I was taking my studio work more and more to my home. And so I was recording audio sounds from just kids playing or chopping onions or, you know, just this overlapping, I think that was Symphony of the Domestic, that, you know, it was sort of like, well, if I'm bringing my studio to my home, I might as well bring my home to my studio or the gallery and, have that conversation within that public space, you know, of the gallery, I'm taking this private stuff and bringing it into the public space. So, I got off topic. So the stuff, you know, started with the seesaw. And, you know, we had been performing that once a year at least, up until a couple of years ago. I think the last one was a couple of years ago. So, and that speaks to, I think, her getting older as well.
Yeah. And like, obviously you would have different, like you mentioned them kind of being this timestamp too. So like every time you performed them, I'm sure the objects were different, right? Like she's not into Barbies anymore. Now she's into whatever.
Yeah. And she's just into her phone. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's like you guys kind of, you know, the balance would be different now.
We've talked about doing a current one, and so hopefully we'll just make that happen. I haven't. Usually, it's like, oh, I wait to be invited, and then I perform it. And you know, I was waiting for this one locally in Columbus that didn't happen. It was like a reunion show that never happened. So it'd be a
new car you'd have to balance, and a cell phone, and her.
Car insurance, right?
And a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Like, you just think of all, you know, I mean, that would be like a weird, or not a weird, but like a challenging thing. Cause, you know, what they say, like the kids get older and the problems get, or the, what is it? Like, small kids, small problems, you know, and big kids, big problems. And it's so like the tangible objects might have minimized in your home of like this invasion of kid stuff. But like now you got big things to think about, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. Oh my God.
Oh, that's so interesting. I wanted to have you talk too about, I like the project without Chloe, because I feel like that also addresses the same thing, but in a different way. Could you talk a little bit about that work?
Yeah. I often refer back to that piece thinking like, God, why couldn't I just make more photography? Mm. Like, it's so much easier to ship places instead of like a truckload of stuff that I'm installing. So Without Chloe is a series of, 5 or 6 pieces. I think there's 6, but oftentimes people only show the 5 because there are 5 that are vertical and 1 is horizontal. But I took photographs, at different spaces throughout my house and literally cut out with an X-Acto blade anything that, referred to my daughter. So it was anything made by her, of her, because of her, et cetera. And so, that, you know, and that can have a sort of a macabre overtone to some people who don't maybe know my work, or, you know, they think of sort of lack as being gone, mm-hmm. where I sort of looked at it as a presence in the absence, this sort of perforation that becomes so prevalent and almost like, you know, like lace or cheese, you know, it's completely dismantling the photograph because mm-hmm. there's so much that is this person is so much a part of my life that, that I was trying to show that through the lack of that evidence. And then it's, in sort of like a 2-inch sort of shadow box. And so when it's installed on a wall or, you know, in a space that the shadows sort of project onto the gallery wall and mm-hmm. vice versa. So, yeah, I mean, and that talks to the stuff as well, you know, but then taking it one step further and actually documenting the house, in a different way.
Yeah, I just think it's I like how you are interested too in sort of just reinventing some of our vantage points as a mother, you know, like instead of just inviting us to be overwhelmed, like, here's how overwhelming it is. It's like, well, what about all the other ways that we could think about this, you know? I like that about your work. Tell me, you know, I'm interested too in this idea of like, your daughter she's now 15 and you were making work her whole life. And so I just think it's, you have some wisdom to share, you know, or like some encouragement, certainly. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to like say it's really hard and it gets easier or anything like that, but just, just like, what have you learned, as you've transitioned from having like a young kid to a teenager and, you know, maybe just share a little bit about your experience.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, I guess the choice of bringing her into my work, I mean, not all mother artists make artwork about being a mother, you mm-hmm. know? So that was one way for me to survive those years, I guess, mm-hmm. To physically actually have that conversation with her, in the studio playing around, you know, I call them moments, you know, the 3 things that I break my work down into are stuff, holes, and moments. And the moments were those times whenever we'd be fooling around in the studio, or she'd be playing with something that I made, and, or, you know, we talk about the one video work sharing space where we were in a restaurant and she was cold and I had sort of a zip up or a cardigan on, and she literally sat on my lap and put her arms into mm-hmm. my arms, into the cardigan that I was already wearing. And she said to me, "Mom, this would be a really cool performance piece."
Oh.
Probably like 7. And I'm like, yeah, well, we should just take it to the studio and like play around with it or see how that, you know, would look. And so then we literally did it one time, and, with just a camera on a pedestal in this, you know, blank space in grad school. And, you know, there was nobody behind the camera and she's goofing off. I mean, and I include those moments mm-hmm. in that video because I think that they're important to show, again, it's the agency of the child. I'm not coercing her into being in my artwork. She'd probably feel differently about it now. She'd be like, no, I'm not doing that.
Well, that's why we're going to talk to her in the second half of this episode.
Yes, I love it. So I think it was hard, but, I don't feel that it necessarily had to be. And I don't feel like it was horrible for me either. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, that while I was a single mom, I do feel like I had a lot of support from my grad community, from, you know, the general community, and also, from my husband now, who at the time, I mean, we were together for 10 years. I mean, he's been in her life for 10 years and we just got married last year, but, he helped a lot too. I mean, mm-hmm. whenever he was around, he was living in California for a while. And, when he was around, he was picking her up or, you know, doing stuff too. So, you know, it's a community.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
it's a village.
Great to hear that.
Yeah.
Okay, Courtney, let's talk about just sort of the umbrella of maternal art in general. Cause I feel like you are such a good person to, I don't know, just have this like more direct conversation about, maternal work. I know that you are very well, like you're an academic, right? So like you're well read, you know, sort of what's out there. Research is a part of your work in ways that maybe, other people are not as diligent about like doing research and, I know that you're a wealth of knowledge, I guess is what I'm trying to say, in terms of like the whole maternal lineage of art making. So I don't know, I feel like you would be a good person to like, just, let's just open up this can and like say, you know, like what is it about maternal work that feels so important? Like why is it missing maybe from some larger art world conversations, and maybe like what within this conversation and context of maternal art feels a little dry? Like, let's talk about the pros and cons kind of, I guess.
Sure. I guess I felt research is still such a huge part of my practice. I mean, my husband said one time, years and years ago, he's like, you get your ideas from reading. And I hadn't really put two and two together. It's not mm-hmm. like, you know, I'm reading theory, like mm-hmm. psychology and like these, you know, I think that the research that's out there now is so much more than what there was before. So yeah. I guess to start off, I mean, we mentioned legacy in one of your questions, and you know, the beginnings would start with Mary Kelly and Nero Letterman Ukeles, and you can't have the conversation about the maternal without talking about those two artists who, you know, at a very, you know, early time frame were making artwork about the maternal, but not talking about, not like, I mean, Mary Kelly was, but Meryl Latterman Ukeles talking about labor and maintenance. Mm-hmm. That was because of her experience being a mother, but she never had that conversation necessarily within the space of the gallery as being maternal work. So I always say that I couldn't be doing the work that I'm doing now without the second wave of feminists who did the work that they did to get women to where they are in, you know, in the world as they are now. Mm-hmm. So since then, I mean, whenever I started grad school and, you know, since my studio visit saying crap, I don't want to talk about where, you know, when I went to the library and, I was like, well, okay, let's talk about feminist maternal. There was one book at our library that I found, and it was Feminist Art and Maternal by Andrea Liss. And that was 2009 that it was written. And that kind of became a Bible for me. And then mm-hmm. shortly thereafter, you know, I discovered The Mother Reader by Moira Davies and The M Word by, you know, dear friend, colleague, and force to be reckoned with, Jenny Klein, mm-hmm. and who was written also by Meryl Chernick, who was also, you know, a maternal artist from back in that time period as well. And
they co-curated an exhibition at Ohio University. I want to say it was 2006, maybe, or four even, called like The Art of the Maternal or something. Well, I mean, these women started it.
Yes.
and I felt it was important to know that lineage, and then to figure out where my work then would reside within that art historical context. You know, Natalie Lovelace, another force, I mean, who went to great lengths to hold three international exhibitions called New Maternalisms in three different countries and with a host of international mother artists and not just mother artists, but father artists as well. Mm. And, you know, it's sort of knowing what other people are doing, finding this community growing and growing. Once I was invited to the second New Maternalisms, you know, the world just opened up to me. I mean, there was, Alejandra Herrera Silva working in Santiago, Chile, Shira Richter working in Israel, Irene Perez in Spain. And then Deirdre Donahue, in Rotterdam. I mean, again, I'm missing like a ton of people, but all of a sudden it became an international, and we were and every time we would do an exhibition, generally those women were around or came to, or then, you know, there was a hosted symposium in which, you know, there was critical theory being discussed and then written about. And so then the maternal, or the theory of the maternal, which, you know, this is my translation of the maternal, is, you know, I always sort of jokingly say it's like reading the New York Times maternally. The idea is like you are actually considering the space of the other. Mm. You know, it's utter empathy and utter care. Braca Edinger, I mean, she talks about carriance. You know, it's the idea that, you know, you were carried. Right. You were taken care of. And so how do you, you know, maternal art doesn't have to be about a biological mother or a person who has a child, right, per se. You know, it could really be just about having this utter and complete care and empathy for the other, you know, the other. And so now, I mean, and then, you know, we get into social media and the concept that everything is so readily available while...
Yeah, does it ever feel like you're making work kind of in this vacuum?
No. I mean, because you're constantly seeing what other people are doing and in support of what other people are doing, because inevitably it's different. You know, you can't... You have to be conscious of what, I mean, it's such a small community of artists that are working in this space that, while it's growing, don't get me wrong, you know, to not have knowledge of what other artists are doing is kind of a slap in the face. I mean, it's sort of, you need to be cognizant of what others are making and why and how and how that fits in. I mean,
I think that's an important conversation, like to just, you know, to have on this platform. I think it's like, because so many of us know and follow each other and we champion each other and we understand that like the more we consume of each other's work, obviously the more it influences like our own practice, and that's not a bad thing, right? But to not understand like how that influence is seeping into your work and not like put some language to that, I think is where it's like, come on. Yeah. You know,
it's a simple, I mean, and actually, there was a GIF a Giphy one time that showed, you know, just a number, like one woman reaching up and a woman bending over and pulling her up. And then that woman like reaching up and then another woman mm-hmm. pulling her up. And then it just kept on going. And it was such a beautiful and like simple little, mm-hmm. little gif of, you know, just women helping each other. And the idea is that there is a, you're not operating in a vacuum, right. That this, there should be a general, like knowledge and acknowledgement are both very powerful tools and, you know, they need to be used wisely.
Yeah. How would you recommend that people, you know, other artists listening, how would you recommend that they, you know, like bring good research and education into their art practices? Obviously, like scrolling social media is not enough, you know, even though it's a wonderful right. tool and it's a great way to find out information and see what other people are doing. I think that's where the vacuum can kind of come in, you know, if it's only social media that you're consuming. But do you have any like thoughts on ways that people can enrich their practice and really be aware of their lineage rather than just aware of like what their peers are doing, if that makes sense?
Right. I mean, a simple Google search will bring up a plethora of books, I would say. I mean,
Artist Parent Index. We got to call out Sarah Irvin.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I mean, doing wonderful work. And then you have Rushika Singh in India, who's doing sort of the Asian Art Index, you know, in a way that Sarah was doing for, and actually I don't know the limits of Sarah's index in terms of countries, but
it's worldwide, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And I think Meryl and Jenny are also working on a new sort of, you know, like I said, Meryl and Jenny started so early and then the ball just started rolling. It's sort of like, I mean, my thesis show was called Performing Visibility. And the idea is largely a protest of putting the maternal in the space of the gallery. It's sort of like, hey, thank you, my foremothers who came, you know, and did the work that they did. I'm loud and in your face and I'm going to have this conversation. And that visibility is what everybody else is doing. You know, it's right. like, we are all in this together and the more, and what you're doing, you know, I mean, like, having these conversations, and so many others, we're all in concert here. Like so many others are having, you know, having the space to have the dialogue. Why it makes it difficult for mothers to also be artists or have a career. I mean, that gets so much deeper, but, and political and like, it's structurally problematic, but then having this sort of visibility and conversation out in the open allows others to also have the conversation out in the open. And then all of a sudden it's a roar or it's, you know, like I said, that ball it's snowballed. And I think, oh, I don't even know what our original question was, but
that's all right. We're in the good part right now. That's good.
There's just so much information out there. I mean, you can look at anybody's biography on their CV. You could look at bibliographies and, you know, it's just,
I think too, just like recognizing that research is an important element of studio practice. Like, you know, I just think that's, we don't, you know, we're all as mothers and especially like those of us with younger kids, I think we're just so concerned with like the time to make the work that we forget about, you know, education and learning and research and reading and writing is also, you know, part of a healthy studio practice. And you know, like maybe that's what our practice is right now, you know, and if we get a Saturday to make work, that's great. But like, you know, you could almost like do a self-imposed artist residency in motherhood where you're just gonna research, you know? And
yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna talk to Lenka. To Lenka about
that. Yeah. really glad you are tuning in to this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast. I wanted to take a minute to share about the exciting programming we are offering for our community this fall. Our Crit Group program is now open for enrollment. This program is structured around small groups of artist mothers who are paired with one of our crazy inspiring mentors. Each mentor will guide their group over 10 weeks, providing feedback and critique on your work. You'll take turns within your group sharing your art and using some of the program prompts to discuss your ideas and studio practice. And this time around, we are putting a special focus on the professional practice elements of your career too. Your mentor and group members will take a look at your website, your artist statement, Instagram, and more, or help you develop these things if you don't already have them. And you'll have a chance to present an artist talk with a panel of artist mentors who will give you feedback. This program is such a great way to form deeper relationships with other artists, to push your work to new places, and watch yourself grow immensely. We offer scholarships and payment plans. So head to our website, artistmotherpodcast.com, and click the Crit Group tab to see all the info for the program. Signups close on September 4th, 2020. The second thing I'm delighted to share with you that is happening this fall is our virtual retreat. Since we can't gather in person, we're going virtual and inviting you to plan a little getaway weekend for yourself, whether in your home or at a safe hotel or Airbnb, to rest, relax, and enjoy a weekend of inspiring artist mother content. We have incredible panels and workshops that we are presenting via Zoom, and we're even going to craft a little menu for you guys to send out to make it easy for you to plan for your weekend, cocktail recipes included. We really just want you to enjoy a break. It's been such a hard season for so many of us, and carving out some space to sink your teeth into your art practice and inspiring content, I hope, is really what you need right now. The retreat is happening October 9th and 10th, 2020, and we would love to have you join us. All info can be found on our website, artistmotherpodcast.com. Just click the retreat tab once you get on our homepage. All right, back to our episode. So now I'm so excited to bring Chloe, Courtney's daughter, on. She is going to share a little bit about what it's been like to have an artist as a parent. And we're going to hear about her experience being included in a lot of her mom's projects. Chloe is 15 now, and Courtney has been making work about her relationship with Chloe for the past 10 or more years. So I'm really excited to bring Chloe on. Thank you both for setting up an additional time to talk to me. And welcome back, Courtney, and welcome, Chloe, to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for
Okay, so Chloe, I just want to hear kind of the dirt behind what it's been like to have an artist as a parent. How has it, you know, influenced your life? Do you feel like your life and upbringing has been pretty normal, or has it been weird? Just tell me a little bit about what your life has been like with Courtney as your mom.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I thought it was kind of weird at first, when just like kind of realizing it at maybe like a later stage, but also, you know, so early on, I just thought it was normal. And I just thought, you know, I have the best childhood ever, you know, like I get to play with clay all the time. I get to paint whenever I want to. Like, it was awesome. You know, being in, with my mom being in grad school and, you know, just having her friends around all the time. I always had someone to play with. Always had something to do. Mm. And, I don't know. I think it really changed my childhood. And I think a lot of children definitely didn't have that type of upbringing. So, yeah.
So you feel it was good, and, you know, you got to experience a lot of things maybe that other kids didn't.
Definitely.
Which was good. Do you have a lot of friends who, like, know stuff about art, or do you feel like, you know, you're kind of, I don't know, different in that way?
Yeah, I really don't. Like, a lot of my friends just, I guess, you know, with now I'm a freshman in high school, and I guess that means, you know, there are probably more people that have that type of experience, but also a lot of my very close friends really don't, and they really don't understand it either. They, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I took a friend to one of my mom's things the other day, and you know, it was a challenge to try and like explain it to him, and then you know, tell him to come with me, and like, you know, so it's just like, I don't know, it's hard, but it's also you have to find a way to explain it, you know. Yeah.
Does that give you like more respect for your mom because you're like, man, this is, it's got to be kind of hard to be an artist, or does it make you more like, why did you stick with this for so long?
It's a lot of both. Like, yeah. It's like, why did you put me to this? But like, it's also like, you know, it's helpful because I learned so many good like social skills and being able to talk to whoever I meet with, you know, art shows or wherever we travel to. Yeah, like
international women that you meet.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Coming from all over the world.
I think too, there's just this element of being, you know, soaked in the art world that, like you're saying, you do have to kind of know how to converse. And it's not just that you have to know how to converse about art, but, you know, so much of art is dialogue and talking through ideas. And so no matter what you're talking about, I think having that experience within the art world where you're kind of expected to vocalize what you're thinking and, you know, share thoughts and bring up other experiences, I think just can maybe be influential for any area of your life.
Mm-hmm. I think also she was around a lot of caring, loving adults that mm-hmm. really embraced her presence because she was probably the only child around. So mm-hmm. both in grad school and then traveling to exhibitions that had other women. She was like the only kid around. So mm-hmm. they all really...
And probably the only kid that would like actually talk to them about it because it was just so like trying to be so social with everyone.
Yeah.
Okay, so Chloe, I would love to hear you talk a little bit about what it's like, what it's been like for you to actually participate in your mom's work. So, you know, it's been one thing to have an artist as a mom, but you've also had an artist as a mom who's making work about you and about, you know, her journey as a mom. So I'm just interested to hear like what it's been like for you to actually be a physical presence in some of her performance pieces.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of it for me, like we were talking about before, is that, you know, I do have to explain it to some of my friends. I'm like, or like, what does your mom do? She makes work about me. Like, you know, and some people don't really understand it, and you have to kind of explain. And I guess, you know, at some point, my mom had to explain it to me and be like, okay, this is why this is, you know. And I think there has been so many conversations about it that it's just so natural to talk about now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being a part of it at first didn't really make sense to me, but now it does. And, you know, just recently, I think the last performance, it just changes so much. And, you know, I started, like, helping her with some of the performance. And whereas before it was – not like that. And it's just growing and changing and, you know, where also our relationship is too.
Yeah. How many times have you guys done the imbalance with piece? That's the, for the listeners, that's the piece that you, Courtney, you're trying, you put Chloe on the end of this balance beam with a bunch of her stuff, and then you kind of try to hop on and balance the whole thing. So I'm curious to know how many times you've done that now.
I think my current calculation is around 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. It was sort of meant to be an annual piece after I first did it for my MFA thesis exhibition. And I felt that it was received with such success that I wanted to do it again, but felt not that it wasn't true to do it again. Like mm-hmm. there was no way to do it again. And then how would I embrace that same essence and honesty of that kind of experience again, mm-hmm. In repeating the performance. And so that's whenever I made that kind of like sort of decision that it can be different and change and evolve, and it will just be like a portrait and reflecting that annual performance. And then, you know, and I think that it really has been because we did it at Blue Star Contemporary in San Antonio. And
was it
you
the
were
last
right about
time?
Yeah, right before you turned 13. And then
That's
we went
right.
to Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And right after that. And so it's been about 2 years since we've done it. So. Mm.
Yeah, I was joking with your mom in the other part of the interview how she's going to have to like start putting, you know, a boyfriend on the other end and a car and a cell phone and like how the stuff is going to change as you've grown up, Chloe. And I mean, that's part of what makes the work interesting, but also challenging for her to conceptualize it.
Yeah, I mean, and soon it'll probably be the same. It'll just be like...
We should do it again.
It'll be so similar. Like, mm-hmm. it'll just weigh out to be the same. And I don't know how much you weigh, but, like, uh-huh. I don't know how much
well,
of
also,
a difference.
I think that the things that are, like, that accommodate you have changed to be, it's just your phone replaces everything.
and a basketball or, you know, whatever you're into. But it's interesting just to think about that, how as you grow, Chloe... you know, the tactile things that your mom has to process through and that kind of can weigh you guys down have, you know, gone off the balance beam. But now she has this whole adult person, you know, pre-adult person to deal with.
Yeah.
And I say deal with in a loving way. I mean it really, like, I can't wait to see what, you know, people, what adults my kids turn into, but also it's, you know, it's a lot to think about.
Fortunately, it happens slowly and over time, and
yeah,
you can adjust.
Yes. Chloe, I'm interested to kind of hear you talk a little bit about what it's like, what it's meant to for you to have your mom making work about her relationship with you and about motherhood. I think back to, like, I make some paintings about my experience with motherhood, and I'm always a little, like, I don't know, apprehensive, like, you know, about saying some, communicating the wrong thing and, like, wondering what my kids will think later on in, you know, if they'll think, like, oh, man, she obviously had it so hard, or she... you know, like, motherhood is this thing that was challenging for my mom. I love the way that your mom, way that Courtney presents work, and that it's, you know, it's loaded, and there's a lot that she's saying, but also there's sort of this, well, you know, she's always talking about balance, right? And how it's like there's the good and the bad that comes with this experience. But I think... I would just love to hear from you, Chloe, to, you know, just hear what it's like. Has it ever felt challenging for you to think about what the work is saying about motherhood? And, you know, is it something that you've thought too hard about, or do you feel like you're glad that she's making work about her experience that feels honest?
Well, okay. It definitely has. I mean, it's always been there, and it's always been something that we've been able to talk about. And it's always been something that, you know, we can criticize after, or we can talk about after and be like, oh, that didn't go as well as planned. Or, oh, let's talk about this. Like, what does this really mean to us? And what does this, you know, mean about our relationship? And I feel like it's always been about that. And I feel like it's always been about, you know, how close we are and how, you know, that art really brings that out. And if we didn't have that in our life, I don't think we would be as close as we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And that matters a lot to me. And I think that if, you know, that hadn't happened to us, then everything would be very, very different.
I love that. I love hearing that you feel like you have a stronger relationship with your mom because she's let you in sort of on her work and, you know, just really shared an honest look at what her life has been like caring for you. Because I think a lot of parents feel like they can't show their kids, you know, what they're really feeling and thinking because, I don't know, they're afraid that it might hurt their relationship or something.
Yeah, she, by her showing her struggles to me, it's made things easier and also harder in some part.
I think it's also just including you in wasn't always, it was sort of like, it was kind of a game. Like a lot of times in the studio, and that's, you know, I talk about my artist statement moments, you know, I mean, a lot of things started from just playing around or just being, you know, doing something, you know, that was like a sketch that then started,
things that come naturally.
The moments that, and then analyzing that and making, formalizing it.
Yeah. I mean, I remember just us kind of sitting around sometimes and we'd just like think of some sort of like idea. I mean, not to say that, you know, I help you with your work at any point or whatever, but it is nice to think about like ideas that we might have or like some pieces that we might decide to do.
Yeah.
Are you your mom's hardest critic?
Probably. I mean, I like to think that I am, but sometimes I'm not as critical.
I think in the recent years, she's been more critical of me using her image. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also the shift in agency and sort of like her wanting to create her own image, especially online and social media and whatnot. So and again, that's the consent and conversation that we've had throughout. And I respect that and, you know, only show pictures of her if she lets me.
But it's also, you know, it's being able to have that conversation and like being able to be like, no, Mom, I don't really want that. Or maybe we could do it in a different way or let's, you know, and I've gotten to be the age that like, it makes sense for me to be able to like, or whatever, or just it, it works out.
Yeah. I mean, we've always had a conversation, like I've never forced you to be a part of the artwork.
I mean, I even remember the very first time that we did the performance piece, which was before your thesis show. And you, you just like constantly caring for me and constantly like, hey, is everything okay? Like just checking in, like, you know, and I, maybe we were like even talking more than we did on the, but I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's a good, I mean, it's a good way that we just like started off things and it's just taken off from there.
Okay, so do you have any super memorable moments over the past 10 years of you guys kind of, you know, making, you participating in the work that Courtney's made about you?
There's a couple. There's one that I don't, like I have never forgotten, which was the very first time or maybe second time that we did it in front of like a big group of people, the Imbalance with Peace, for her thesis show. And I remember I was just sitting on the, in my seat and then all of a sudden I just, out of nowhere, everyone is completely silent. I'm like, does anyone have a pen? Didn't have anything to write with. And I just wanted to like draw stuff. And everyone started scrambling around looking for a pen and like finally got one. And I was like, thank you. Like just not afraid to say anything. And like, this is my favorite one. I mean, anything else I don't really.
Well, that one you had, I think a lot of your friends are actually there and like the parents of your friends and as well as students that were my peers and then family. And I mean, it was a packed gallery. But what about any like traveling or, I mean, we did, we recorded a lot of stuff also that wasn't in front of an audience.
Well, there's another part when we were doing the performance piece for my 13th birthday, I remember we were opening up one of the presents that we had. We all had, like, we had them set out on a table, and I don't know if she, I don't know. If
that's the blessing, wish, or spell for the next generation, which was a coming-of-age ritual that I don't have it on my website yet because I always wanted it to kind of live as, like, a book kind in a way, but I have other ideas too, but, that's now 2 years old. And, But I asked women from all over the world to offer a piece of text for a girl turning 13, like coming of age, and then to have either an object or an action accompany that text that would be performed. They knew that it was going to be performed to Chloe, my daughter, that text didn't have to be for her. It could be for their former 13 self, their next door neighbor, their granddaughter, their, you know, niece, nephew, niece, you know, whatever. So go ahead.
We were opening a lot of them and not all of them spoke to me, not all of them, you know, obviously, like you just said, but I got one from my grandmother and my Grammy, my mom's mom. And, I remember I asked my mom to read it, and
because she started crying.
Yeah.
Chloe couldn't finish reading it because she started crying.
And then I had to have my mom read it to me, and it was just such like a powerful piece that, like, you know, that was just the highlight of it, because it was a very long piece. It ended up being longer than we expected, but you know, that just kept us going because it was so like sweet, and I don't know.
You get what you get, but don't get upset.
Yeah, right. I still have the letter, you know.
Just. Yeah. That's shout out to mom. Hi, mom.
Hi, Granny. Thank you guys for sharing about that. So I was curious too, have you done any residencies together, or like, have you done any parent-friendly residencies, Courtney?
That is so funny because now it's probably been about 5 years ago that I was working for a nonprofit, and I was interested in bringing the idea of an artist residency to the nonprofit here in Athens. And they sent me to the Alliance of Artist Community, and it was wonderful. And then I sort of like, you know, made all these connections. And then I had this moment where I asked some pretty famous or well-known, you know, residency directors who were representing the residencies. I said, so what are your plans for, you know, because at the time it was not a thing.
Right.
You know,
now it's more.
Friendly. Now it's everywhere. It's very popular. But I said, what are your plans for, have you considered? And they said, oh yes, actually we have that on the books, but they didn't mention it at this conference. No, that was never mentioned at this conference. And they said, yeah, we have one coming up. And then I remember when it opened up to the public, and everybody was like tagging me on Facebook and saying, oh, check it out. You know, like family friendly residencies. And it was like in January. I'm sorry. That's for somebody who has a not school age child.
Right.
yes, you homeschool, but I don't. And I, I didn't quite understand that aspect of it. But, then Chloe was kind of like old enough that we didn't really need that in a way.
Yeah.
But I think it would still be an option if it were something that Chloe wanted to do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like you're saying, I think it's changed a lot, but I still think there's a lot of programs that it's like they're trying, but because it wasn't built from the ground up to be like a parent-friendly residency, there's a lot of things. Like, I'm thinking of one in particular that it's like, I would love to do this program, but they only give you one bedroom. And I'm like, how can I, like, and they're promoting it as a family-friendly, like you're supposed to bring your family and, you know, but I'm like, I have three kids. And like, I do have a spouse who would be willing to come and like, you know, be the caretaker during the residency, and it would be great to have them all there, but like, what are we supposed to do, cram five people in one bedroom? You know, and I'm like, that doesn't sound fun. Like, or you know, like, I don't think that I would get the headspace. I don't know, it was just, I feel like there's been a lot, there's good intentions and there's a lot of change happening, but there hasn't been a lot of like completely, this is like totally open to, you know, parents, and it's flexible, and like the whole system hasn't been changed, you know, yet. It's like we're putting band-aids on systems that aren't working, but we need like complete overhaul.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the same with childcare at conferences and things like that, that in gallery events, and things that, you know, people like, yeah, they're slowly, again, it's all part of, it's all why I started doing the work that I am doing, is to sort of make that visible, you know, and other women too, you know, but anyway,
yes,
we'll get there.
Yes, we'll get there. More change to come. Okay, guys, so I always close my interviews by asking five final questions. And Chloe, I would love for you to answer these two, especially the first four. So both of you can answer for me. What are you currently reading?
Okay, I'm currently reading a book for school called The Mockingbird.
Ooh,
nice. To Kill the Mockingbird. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's just a classic that we have to read.
Yep.
Your audience will totally know that.
Yep. Courtney, what about you?
I'm reading Signature of All Things.
Oh, so good.
And starting. Yeah. And my mom gave it to me, and I like Elizabeth Gilbert. Mm-hmm. And I've been enjoying reading fiction again, yeah, after so many years of reading like theory and art history and so I'm reading that in conjunction with Inappropriate Bodies by Rachel Bueller, who is a dear friend of mine, and you know, working in the maternal as well. Yeah. And I mean, I have work in that book, but they're, you know, and I'm only at the beginning, but I want to read it the whole way through. So yeah. I'm really excited to hear what all the essays. And then the new one that I'm really interested in is Fairy Tales on the Teen Screen.
Oh.
And it's an essay. I mean, it's, I would like to get the hardcover, but I only have a digital version, but it's a pretty extensive looking at like fairy tale tropes through like Gossip Girl and, you know, a lot of like teen movies and, mm-hmm, and episodes, network stuff.
I bet that's good. What are you guys currently watching or listening to if you're not watching anything?
Oh my gosh. No, I mean,
do you watch anything together? Is there like a family friendly show that you guys like?
Oh, family friendly is different when you have like a teenager.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, my husband and I are currently watching a number of Blacklist. It's like a episode of James Spader, crime, FBI stuff.
Mm. I'm really not watching like specifically watching one thing, because I'm always like, I don't know. I'm always like doing something, homework or, you know, just
you go through episodes.
I do go through. I mean, recently maybe watched a Netflix show called You. It's like pretty new thing.
You, okay.
Kaylin, talking about things that you listen to, it was cool because last weekend Chloe asked me to come up with a list of, we spent 3 hours from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Basically brainstorming music that we used to listen to
in the car together, and specifically in our old Subaru. And I just made a whole playlist, and I guess that is what I've been listening to, is just like music constantly.
That's cool. I actually have been thinking a lot recently about how a lot of the music I enjoy is music that my parents listened to when I was little. And it's not music that now I would be like, yes, I love Shania Twain, you know, but when I hear Shania Twain come on, I'm like, yes, this is like my childhood, you know? And it's good to, definitely good to listen to that music in the car or whenever. What would you guys do if you had a whole weekend to yourself, and maybe, that you guys could spend together?
I mean,
what's your favorite thing to do when you have a free Saturday with your mom?
Oh God.
Well, I mean, studio stuff. I mean, you've been enjoying going in there, and then,
yeah, that's true.
She's also been enjoying printmaking a little bit. So we sneak into the university print studio.
That's cool.
Yeah. That's probably going to be our ideal Saturday today and tomorrow, maybe. doing a little bit of that.
We have like, I mean, I think we like road tripping.
Mm-hmm. We like shopping,
thrift shopping.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait till my daughter's older. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. It's fun.
Okay. And both of you, what is your beverage of choice? What do you like to drink while you're out having a fun day with mom, Chloe?
We definitely like our coffee.
Yeah.
We like grabbing some Starbucks to go.
Nice.
Or some sort of drink up the road. But what do you?
I mean, I'm a water, wine, coffee person, so
nice. You like water.
Okay, Courtney, and my last question is for you. I just like to offer a space for you to give a shout out to anyone who's supported you in your work.
Gosh, I mean, that list is so long, and I think I have to start off first with family, because without the support of mom and dad from undergrad, all the way through to, to current times, just to be supportive of the work that I do, as an artist and mother. And then my immediate family, Chloe and my husband, Cullen, he's been there helping build things, load things, borrow his truck to take it, 3 hours away, full of stuff in the back of it. So that is a big support system as well. And then, beyond that, the broader sort of art community of women, scholars, artists out in the world. I mean, Jenny Klein, is the nearest. Dwayne McDermid also has been, a big supporter, at Ohio University, and Jenny has written about my work, which then sort of springboarded, into the recognition, I guess, mm-hmm. of the work, by getting it out there a little bit farther, which then leads to like Natalie Lovelace, who curated the New Maternalisms, internationally, which then led to other connections to, conferences. Without listing everyone, it's really that community of artists, mothers, scholars who are in the international realm that I will thank, and I love you guys dearly. Mm-hmm. And and Danielle Wyckoff, she's also one of my best friend and collaborator, and she is a new mother, not so new, but like new enough. Yeah.
I met Danielle at CCAC last year, and she was amazing.
Yes. And we have a collaborative show coming up at Old Dominion University in the fall that, it's starting, it's a year and a half away. And now it's like, it's a half a year away.
Wow. Yeah.
We really need to start. And it's hard now that she's, a full-time job and
new baby.
Mom of a small child, a toddler. And so what that collaboration looks like now, we need to reinvestigate,
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my... It's hard to not name everybody.
I mean,
because there's so many.
Well, and you've been in the artist mother community for a long time now, and making work about this has positioned you in a certain way, and it's really nice to hear how well connected you are and how this community has supported you, and I'm just grateful to be plugging into it in the time that I am,
Yeah, and it's a growing community. Yeah.
Yep.
And there's room for everyone.
Yes. So.
Come on in. The water's warm.
Thank you both, Chloe and Courtney, for taking the time.
Thank you, Kaylin.
Thank you so much.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.